us to place principles.
Thanks, Dana. The first speaker at this time will be Mike S. from the Rising Phoenix Group in the Central Lakes area, sharing on life and life's terms.
Somebody gonna hold up the big sign for me?
Yeah, I'll do that for you.
Good evening, folks. I'm Mike. I'm an addict. And I'm a stander, so I'm gonna stand. And I get pretty nervous when I do these things, so maybe if we could just take a moment of silence and say the Serenity Prayer, that always helps me out, calm down a little bit. If we could just have that moment now, I'd appreciate it. Thanks. What brought us here?
God, grant us the serenity to accept the things that cannot change, the courage to change the things that can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thanks. So I'm Mike, I'm an addict. I said I'm from Oshawa. I see some of my, originally I'm from Sarnia. I see some of my friends from Sarnia over there representing, which is nice. And that's a funny thing about this program, right? Everywhere you can go to a meeting. And I remember I took a trip through the United States on a motorcycle. And I went to an Alabama and I did what I did every night that I stopped on my trip, and I'd go on the world website and look up the meeting and find out where the meetings were. And so I went to this meeting in Alabama, and I was back in my motorcycle in, and it was in this dark neighborhood, and there was a bunch of people standing outside, and this huge man, the biggest man today I've ever seen, from Alabama came over and he said, "Are you from Canada?" I said, "Yeah, I'm from Canada." And I'm not kidding, he picked me up. And look at, I'm not a skinny guy, right? He picked me up like a suitcase, and he carried me into the meeting, and he set me down, have some coffee, and it was quite the experience, right? And it's good to do that, though, right? You meet people from all over, and they invited me to their convention and all this stuff, and it was really, really good to go to different meetings, right? It reminds me that I'm not alone, and you know, I know the subject is life on life's terms, and, you know, we can all, not maybe all of us, but I know for myself, I can think back, and when you hear that term, it never really has a positive spin on it. You know, as addicts, we don't tend to think about positive stuff all the time. I don't anyway. And when I think about life's terms, and I was thinking about it before I came today, and I thought, you know, it's not all negative recovery, and you know, my story had some hard times, because hard times are what get us here. You know, we don't sit around and walk through the garden doors in the morning and decide, hey, we're going to join Narcotics Anonymous. I came here like everybody else, right? Sick, sad, sorry, right? All the time. Hurting, right? Every time I come into these rooms, and when I came and got white key tags, I was always hurting, you know? And life was always tough at those times. The first time, I always carry my book because, you know, if you're going to speak, you have to bring your book, right? That's what I always think, and you got to rat it up a little bit. I throw it down the hall and run over it in my car a few times, you know, because it looks like I'm using it all the time, right? I highlight it all, and you know, that's what you're supposed to do, right? But you know, this book has really been what's helped me get through life on life's terms. And in the good times and the bad, right? I think as addicts, we forget, once things start going good, it's just as good of an excuse to get high as it is when things are going bad. And I found that through my recovery. And I'm going to say both times, because, you know, I didn't quite get it the first time around. And that was some serious life on life's terms. And I'm just going to tell you a little bit about that. I'm not going to go on about it, but because it's more about the hope, not the dope. But, you know, back in the day, you know, I was in this program for 5 years, and I was a police officer back then. So I was a police officer for about 20 years, and back then I was in this program for 5 years. And if you do that kind of work, you know, they like the other drug a little better than the drugs that I liked. It's not really that popular when you're with a bunch of cops to do the drugs that I like to do. So I used alone all the time, right? I was the guy that, you know, made the carpet row, you know, and looked out the little hole in the blind, you know, for 3 or 4 days. You know, that's how I used, right? And nobody, you know, I think nobody knew, but in those times, really nobody did know, or else, right, but it would have been a lot of trouble. You know, I was a real pro at hiding what I was doing, right? And the first time around this program, you know, I showed up here, and I listened to all you people, and I smiled, and people say, how you doing? I said, I'm doing great. I'm just doing great, right? My marriage is falling apart. You know, my kids are being taken away. I'm sleeping in my car because I got nowhere to live. Right, I'm having some trouble in my personal life, but I'm doing great, right? And my first sponsor would always tell me, you know, because I would be scared to tell him, you know, I really feel like using today, right? Because, you know, this disease is crazy. It's like there's two different parts of it, right? If you got a drug problem, you know, and there are people in our rooms that just have drug problems, which means if you stop using drugs, you don't have any more problems. See, that's not my problem. My problem is when I stop doing drugs, that's when my problems really get tough. And that's how it was for me. When I stopped the first time around, it was always the same. Something bad has to happen, right? So that time I got caught using by my ex-wife now, but my wife then, and, you know, I had to do something or my marriage was going to be over. So I do what all good addicts do, go to recovery, go to rehab, right? Going to rehab, all get fixed up. Gonna go to rehab, take a nice little 30-day vacation. Can't tell the cops because, what, you know, so I made up some big story, right? I'm going to, I paid for it myself, 15 grand to go to rehab back in the early 2000s. And I thought, well, this is gonna be great, right? And I remember going to this rehab, it was in Scarborough, and they're walking me around the place, and I'm checking it all out, and I'm thinking, this is going to be all right. You know, I wouldn't tell anybody. Back then, I was working undercover. I had this big, long ponytail. And I didn't tell anybody what I did. I thought, you know, don't you know who I think I am? You know, take it easy, right? And I remember walking around the place, and there's a bunch of people under the payphone. They used to have payphones back then. Some people might remember payphones. We don't have those anymore. Big bank of payphones, and there's a bunch of people underneath, and they're on the phone, and they're all bawling their eyes out. On here, you know, I'm getting the tour and clean it up here, you know. Hey, a week later, where am I? Hey, right, don't leave me, please. You know, same thing, right? It's just part of recovering, I guess. But you know, it taught me a lot about recovery, and I learned a lot about it. But I still wasn't doing all the do things, right? I was still putting on that mask. I still didn't believe really what was going on here. You know, I put on a good act, I had lots of sponsees, I read the books, I did some step work. And I'm just, if you're new here, I'm just going to read this little part, because I love to, you know, read something out of this book. But this is serious a bit, and this is important. And this, in the first 5 years of my recovery, I did not get. And because I did not get this, I couldn't stay clean. And after being 5 years of not using, that's a pretty serious thing to have happened, right? And it's this part right here that I didn't get and I didn't read. So if you're new, you have to get this little part, okay? And it says, our track record shows that it's impossible for us to use successfully. No matter how well it may appear to be in control, using drugs always brought us to our knees. Like any incurable disease, addiction can be arrested. We agree that there's nothing shameful about being an addict, provided we accept our dilemma honestly and take positive action. We are willing to admit without reservation. I didn't read that for years. Without reservation, that we are allergic to drugs. So because I didn't get that part, and we didn't go over that enough in my sponsorship family at the time, something really bad happened. And when something bad happened, you know, I only know how to deal with it one way, right? And that's because I'm not doing all the do things, right? I had this reservation that was dealt with, and it was a pretty bad thing. My partner got shot and killed, and it was a pretty serious event. I was very close by, and I was in a lot of pain, right? And there was a lot of emotion that went on there, you know, and he was my best friend, and he was, you know, his wife was there, and his kids were there, and their father's dead there, shot, and I thought, just a little bit. I'm just going to do a little bit. Just to get over this, just this hard time. And this is after 5 years not using, okay? And I'm just telling you again, I just want to mention this. If you're new, if your mind tells you that, you have to fight that with everything. Because if you got my problem and you put drugs in your body and you're allergic to drugs, like it says there, then we're off to the races, right? Might be one day, might be 2 days, might be 10 years. We don't know, right? All bets are off. And that's what happened, right? I didn't have that resolve. I knew what I was supposed to do. You know, I should have run to my sponsor's house. I should have left that scene. I should have told them I'm not, this is too personal. I'm leaving. Somebody else can have to take care of this or whatever. Right? But I didn't. You know, I stayed there and I suffered through the emotion of that. And then I thought, just this little bit and I'll go and get a white key tag tomorrow. Man, that is the worst lie your brain can ever tell you, because once you put it in your body, that's it. And I did, and I did it. I did a little bit, and then it was off. I was a year and a half, right? A year and a half of torture, right? We all know what it's like. I don't have to describe what it's like. Like, it's just using, right? We don't stop using. And people know what's going on. I mean, I don't look like this when I'm using, okay? I can tell you right now, this is not what I look like. You know when I'm using. You know, people know when you're using. They're like, look at you, man. You look like a Skeletor, right? You know, and your body, my uniform's falling off my body, right? I look like I'm half dead because I'm using every day, all night, using. And I don't know about you, but when I use, I lie, I cheat, and I steal. Those are the first things that happen. I picked up drugs today right now. Those three things are going to happen within the hour. Guaranteed. Now, my occupational choice kind of makes that hard to kind of work that all out, right? Because that's not really what we do in that occupation. But that's what I did, right? And I did that to the point of being arrested and you know, being on the front page of the paper and, you know, my parents getting flowers from the neighbors and it being in my local pay. It was terrible. It was a nightmare. And that is where life on life's terms really started, right there, for me. Like, it was always life, but this was a real piece of life that I needed to deal with, right? And it was tough, right? Because all of a sudden, now you got to stay clean. No more using, right? Job's on the line. It's a big public deal. Family's disappointed. Nobody knew. Your girlfriend's throwing you out. You're going to court. You're on probation. You're not getting paid anymore. There's all kinds of things that start happening, right? And I remember thinking, I worked with 1,000 people for 20 years, 1,000 people, and I thought those people were my friends. I thought when I got on that job, we were the brotherhood, man. We stuck together, right? Just like on TV. It's all right. It's funny. So it's not like that, right? And I can tell you, it's not like that at all. And I'm not going to make any public statements about how I feel about some of the people in that occupation, but I don't have these great feelings, right? And I remember thinking to myself, you know, I'm in a lot of trouble here, right? I mean, the offenses I was charged with were pretty serious, like 5-year minimum jail sentence serious, right? And I remember thinking, okay, you know, I'm going to court. And a guy called me, I'm just a quickly side note here, a guy called me and said, they screwed it all up. They screwed everything up. You can get off. And this was a high up guy. This was a guy very high in the organization. And we had grown up in the organization together and he was kind of my friend. And he said, they've screwed it all up. You can get off this. It's all screwed up. You just got to do this, this, and this, and you're done. I thought, perfect. So I went to my sponsor's house, which was for the next mistake, right? Because you know what he said? Did you do it? Yeah? Got to take your lumps when you did it, right? And I thought, geez, I can get off that. I can get my life. He said, did you do it? He goes, you want to get clean? And I thought, yeah, I want to get clean, but this is my whole life we're talking about, my whole career. This is all I've ever worked. Been here a long time. So I had to, you know, suck it up and admit that I did it and take what went with that. And that was a tough life right there. But you know what? I did it. And I did it, and I'm glad I did it. Because, you know, I wouldn't have stayed clean. I wouldn't have stayed clean. I could not stay clean in that environment. It's not healthy. And a lot of things happened after that. And I decided to resign. That was just the way it was going to go. And it was the best move I ever made. And life on life's terms after that, like there's a lot of years between there, not then and now. That was in 2007. And a lot of things happened. And I moved all over the province. And I did a lot of things in there. But now I want to talk just a bit about what life on life's terms is like now. Because sometimes, you know, we forget that, you know, it's good things are tough to take sometimes. And after I made all those decisions, nothing but good things happened in my life. You know, recovery was serious now. You know, there was no screwing around now. There was step work, there was sponsorship, there was sponsees, there was meetings, there was no screwing around. Because this is my life now. I don't have one more left in me, I guarantee it, right? You know, and then I went back to rehab. That was the second rehab I went to during that time. Because, you know, at that time it was why we always go, just to get out of the hot water. You know, I was thinking I was getting out of hot water. And I went to a place and they kept me there a long time and it was good. I got a lot more out of it because I was serious. You know, you got to take this thing, I have to take this thing seriously. You know, and sometimes I forget to take it seriously. Sometimes I don't go to as many meetings as I should, or sometimes I don't sit with a sponsee as long as I should because I forget how serious this is. You know, I have to come to an event like this to remember, hey, this is my life, right? And when I left all that and got my conviction and convicted and, you know, a criminal record and I can't even work at Walmart, right? I can't because I got a criminal record. I can't do anything. What is going to happen to me? And where am I going to get a job? And how's my life going to... You know, all these things that we start worrying about, right? And, you know, my higher power always shows up because I kept doing the right things, right? I just kept doing the next right thing. I'm telling you something. The most important thing I learned in recovery this time, the most important thing I learned, show up when you say you're going to show up. Do what you say you're going to do. Those two things right there is all I did. And you know what? You build character when you do those things. You become a man of character when you follow those things. And you know what? I did all those things. And I got a job eventually, and I worked in a place where... But you know what? My defects are all still there, right? They gave me $1 million worth of inventory, and I got the keys, and, you know, still the odd time when you're like, shiny. It's pretty shiny. I could take that. Nobody would know. Right? But that, you know, this is where step work comes in, right? Well, I wasn't taking things because, you know, I was brought up to do that. You know, I had to do step work to figure out why I was taking things that, you know, didn't belong to me, right? That's what got me in trouble. My other job, what, I'm going to let it get me in trouble again? No, right? I have to go through the work and figure all that stuff out, right? And I did. And I got this great job, and it was great. I loved it. And then the craziest thing happened. I got another great job from another place. I love that even more. And then I met Big Red. There she is right there. Now, I don't call her Big Red because she's big. She's got a big personality, right? And I like the gum. That's my fiance as of New Year's right there. Right? You know, these are some of the things that have happened because I just keep doing the right thing, right? I keep doing, showing up for work. I work out of my house, so it's really easy. To stay in your pajamas, right? It's really easy to spend an hour trying to get that fly because I got that thing, right? And if I was a young kid, man, they'd be pouring ADD meds down my throat, right? Because I got to go take care of that, right? It's very hard, easy to get distracted, right? But you know what? I got all what I learned about all of that in NA. Right? Do what you say you're going to do. The guy hired me. I said I'd do a job. I do it every day. You know, sometimes I overdo it. Joe can attest to that. You started at 6. It's now in the morning, and now it's 8 at night. It's time to stop working, right? Because we're all, I'm the same, right? I'm still an addict. I still could go full blast, right? But I got to learn this balance, right? And I learn it in Narcotics Anonymous. Everybody here is my family. I don't know all of you, but if you're wearing one of these, I bet I can pull you aside and have a little talk with you and we'll know exactly what we're talking about with each other, right? That's what saves my life today. That's what life on life's terms is for me. I know where to go to get the help. See, don't forget, the cops, they don't know what to do with us. My family, they don't got a clue, right? The court system, they don't know what to do with us, right? My friends, they don't have a clue what to do with me. Narcotics Anonymous, yeah, Dave does. You know what? This is my family here, right? This is where I get the help I need. This is where I get the love I need. This is where when the wheels feel like they're falling off, I can come to a meeting, right? I show up to meetings to see what happens to people that don't show up to meetings, right? Because where else would I see it, right? I wouldn't see it anywhere. And I need to remember what happens to people that don't show up to meetings, right? Because it's easy to get rolling, right? I'm good. Got this great career going now. Got a great relationship going. My kids are back in my life. Oh, my God. It's a good thing we got a time limit. You know, my 17-year-old daughter and her 22-year-old boyfriend. Oh, my God. Carlos. It's lucky to be alive, right? It's lucky to be alive, Carlos. Yeah, and then, you know, I go pick up my, you know. But I didn't have any relationship with those kids, and my ex-wife wouldn't let me see them, and it was a mess, and that's all a mess all the time. Now I go and stay there in Ottawa when I see my kids. She lets me stay in the house. You know, it's hard because they're not my rules. And, you know, the same thing Narcotics Anonymous taught me. Right? Just shut your mouth. Because I got a lot to say about them sleeping in the same room over there. I got a lot to say about that. Carlos is on thin ice. Right? But what can I do? Right? Narcotics Anonymous taught me, this is not my house. These are not my rules. I've got a good relationship with my daughter. I got a good relationship with my son. And as hard as it is for me to choke it out, I have a half-decent relationship with my ex-wife. Right? And that's not me. None of that had to do anything with me. That was all Narcotics Anonymous taught me that. Right? Just shut your mouth. Because nobody really cares what I got to say sometimes. I got a lot to say, but nobody really cares. I'm a sales guy, right? I'm always jabbing, eh? Always talking, but you know what? It's good today. My life's good today. Life on life's terms today has been great because I'm clean. And you guys are a great family. I'm glad I have all of you in my life, even if I don't know you. I know all of you a little better now, so thanks for having me.
Thanks, Mike. The second speaker at this time will be Gail T. from 12 by 12. A group in the Toronto area. Sharing on the gift of desperation.
Thank you. I'm gonna sit down because I'll get wobbly and I'll fall down or something stupid. I get nervous and I don't know where to put myself, so if I can hide behind a table, that's wonderful. My name is Gail, and I am an addict. Yeah. And, you know, it's amazing. When I would relapse, that was my excuse for using. Before I came to this program, of course, I never had an idea of what my problem was. I just knew I did dope. And I stole, and I lied, and I cheated, and I did whatever I needed to do to get those that dope. My topic is the gift of desperation. Now, I know none of you in this room have ever felt desperate, right? Didn't think so. So let me tell you. I lived my life in desperation, I think. As a child, I watched my alcoholic father and my non-drinking mother fight. And, you know, she would, I don't know why she would do something so silly, but she used to hold a butcher knife to her own chest and say, if you come any closer to me, I'm going to stab myself. And I remember seeing that when I was 3 years old. And you know, I look at it now and I'm thinking, what could a three-year-old take from that? Well, I guess I took that I couldn't trust my mother to stay. She was always willing to leave, you know. I never ever threatened myself like that, but I was more outward about my threats. But it's funny, you know, even at that, I did not know what to do. Like, if you can't trust the people in your life to be there for you, to take care of you, what do you do? And so I was always trying to think of what to do. How do I take care of me? You know, because I'm the only one that I can trust. And I'm not very bright. you know, well, I mean, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, I'm not very bright. I don't have the experience. And I often tell my children, I learned survival skills when I was young. My mother had learned survival skills growing up. I had learned survival skills. And when I was raising my daughters, I taught them survival skills. I did not have any life skills. I did not know how to make choices. Hell, nobody ever told me I had a choice until I went to treatment. And then they said, it's a choice. Whoa, I was in my 40s. My God, somebody finally told me I had a choice. Wow, what a concept, you know? But I still didn't get it because I didn't know how to utilize my gift of choice. But I knew about desperation. Desperation, I never thought of it as a gift, but I've been thinking a lot of it over the last 3 weeks. And I realized that every time I became really desperate, I took action. You know, when my first daughter's father, my oldest daughter's father, was beating the crap out of me, and I came to realize that this man was going to kill me if I didn't get away, I got desperate, and I got away. But I didn't know where to get away to, so where did I go? Went down the hall to stay with the drug addicts down the hall, right? They were my friends, they weren't his. They were the only ones I knew out here that weren't his friends first. They were mine, I made them all by myself. And, you know, we all know where that took me. I learned real well down the hall. It's funny, I when I was a kid, my mother used to move us around a lot, looking for a better place, more, you know, stability and everything. Like, we moved sometimes 2-3 times a year. I'm starting to wonder now if the rent got paid, but, you know, that's another story. But, you know, when I was 15, she finally brought us back to the city. I'd been on a farm in Manitoba for a couple of years where the boys thought that I looked really, really good because I had grown in those womanly ways. And, you know, farm boys, they just, you know, what can I say? I have resentments for years. But she brought us back to the city, and I desperation. I do not want to be put at risk anymore. I can't do this anymore. I cannot trust this woman to keep moving me around because things happen to me when we get moved around. And so I ran away from home. But where am I going to go? I kept running. I spent the next year doing nothing but running, looking for a place, a safe place to be. But, you know, it was always an action I took. I never got desperate and just sat there. The trouble is I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go. I got really desperate in 1999. Desperate to the point of, do I kill myself? Or do I get help? And because I couldn't think of my daughter's faces as they would stand over my coffin. I just couldn't sell that one to myself. I went to get help. And I went to the hospital. The hospital sent me to detox. And in detox, they introduced me to Narcotics Anonymous. An H&I group came in there, and God bless him, I still see that member in the meetings today. The guy who brought that meeting into me, and I will always be grateful to him because he introduced me to this fellowship and a different possibility. And, you know, I'm an addict. I'm gung-ho. Everything sounds really great in the beginning. I'm gung-ho. I want to be a part of this. I want to do this. I'm never going to use again. I can do it. But see, all my life, I had wanted, you know, I had thought things were good ideas, but I had no follow through. You know, that's part of not having life skills. I couldn't create a goal and work towards it. You know, it was just give it to me. And I came into these rooms and I wanted you to give me my recovery. I wanted you to, you know, to treat me like I'd been here for 20 years when I'd only been here 20 minutes. And I was resentful as hell because I couldn't get that feeling of belonging that everybody talked about. And so I did more. Because, you know, I was desperate for your approval. I was desperate for belonging. And I still felt like I was on the outside looking in. I didn't realize that's me. The same ego that's been plaguing me at that table as I listened to Mike speak, saying to me, you're not going to be as good as he is. You're not going to, you know, all that shit that I kept, you know, that ego. Kept plaguing me. And so I got really involved in service, really involved. I didn't get involved doing step work because God knows that would take some, you know, personal inventory. That would take some work. I mean, I wanted to do work that everybody could see so that, you know, I would be the one. I learned how to talk the talk. I learned how to show up and shine, but I still didn't get what I needed. And I got myself into that corner that you don't get out of clean. And I was not the exception. At one point, my responsibilities became too much. And I said, well, I know what I can do about this. Because, you know, I moved around a lot when I was a kid. It was always about starting over. And so I said, I will take a drink. And then tomorrow I'll pick up a white key tag and start over. And I can go back to the beginning again. Kind of like I want to do with my step work. I got to a point where I want to go back to the beginning and do it over, you know, without finishing. I did that. I took that drink. And the next day I went like a good little soldier and I picked up that white key tag. What I didn't count on and what I was totally unprepared for was the shame. And the guilt and the, you know, and that feeling of oh, God, rejection. But it all came from me, because the biggest rejection I ever got came from myself. I could never accept myself. I could never love myself. And so I didn't expect you to be able to love me either. And I would prove it because I would go and find people who couldn't love me to tell me that I was unlovable. I left that meeting that night. I'll never forget it. It was Saturday Night Live at the Columbus Center. I left that meeting and I did not come back to NA for 6.5 years. I could not, my pride, my ego would not allow me. And then I got real desperate again because I didn't fall apart overnight. I mean, I managed quite well for quite a long time without falling apart. But then came the time that I did fall apart, because it always does. It doesn't matter how long we do well. Eventually, we start doing those things that bring us back to that hole, that desperation again. And it happened to me. I knew I couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't stand it. Of course, when I tried to come back, I couldn't come back to this group. Are you kidding? You know, I would have to swallow my pride to come back here. And I couldn't do that. So I tried to go to another fellowship. But I'm an NA member in my heart, in my soul. I'm an NA member. This is where I belong. This is home for me. This is where I wanted to belong. Those other people didn't quite get me. And so I had no choice. eventually, if I wanted to do something about my problem, I had to come back to where I belonged. I've been desperate a number of times. And you know, this program did not start to work for me. I did not start to work the program. That's why it didn't work for me. Even when I came back then, I still really didn't do the work. Because I really didn't believe. I didn't trust. I grew up without trust in my life. I didn't know anybody I tried to trust let me down. And that included God. In my mind, in my perspective, that included my higher power. I had a real problem with that. And, you know, it's funny because when I look back at my life, you know, when I was using, there were so many times that I shoulda, coulda, woulda. You know, shoulda been dead, coulda been dead. You know, woulda killed somebody else. And it didn't happen. And the only thing that, the only reason it didn't happen had to have been a higher power, because I had no explanation for it myself. I had some health problems, and I started taking pain meds. those pain meds, fuck, they are something else. They are. We have a legitimate excuse. I had a legitimate reason. I had freaking pain. I had to get a hip replaced eventually. I had real pain, and it was none of your freaking business. Because, see, I still had a poor idea of this program. You know, there's NA over here, and then there's my business over here. and you know, they have no business getting together. Why would I tell somebody about something when I've already made up my mind to do it? So, but my God has a way of humbling me, and my pain meds came caught up to me, pardon me, at a Yuck Yucks night when I was sitting in the front row on the nod beside one of my best friends. And I got called on it. And I didn't want to hear it because I had a reason for using those things, you know. It's, you know, I was either in desperation or resistance constantly. And there came time when I was done. I was done. I don't know why I was done. I found myself getting physically addicted to painkillers. And I knew from this program, I knew I can't afford to do that. I don't want to be there. I have a choice. Somewhere in my head, choice kicked in. And I made a choice. I phoned my doctor. I said, no, we don't want any more of these things. We got to get away from this shit. And I started to change. I got to had a situation where, along about this time, where my youngest daughter, who was every bit her mother's daughter, was holding my grandchild hostage, you know, like, if you aren't pleasing me, you're not seeing her type of thing, right? Another thing of desperation, I laid on my bed for 3 days, crying and brokenhearted and wanting to die because this child I loved, you know, I had no control. Addict with no control. And it hurt me so deeply, and I did not know what to do. And suddenly the thought came to me, you can't change her, you can only change you. And I remember sitting up in bed, and I said, and it starts today. It starts today. Out of desperation comes always comes action, in my case anyway. And that day I started to take action. I finally, after, you know, many long years, I would say 12 and a half years, I finally started to get step one. And you know, that's a stubborn addict, but we're all pretty stubborn. We're all set in our ways. And I did not know, I thought I'd got it. I thought I understood it, but it wasn't until that moment when I knew that the only thing I had any control in change was myself. What an awakening. You know, and I can still, but I've had these awakenings in my recovery, in my recent recovery, that I'm gonna have 4 years in March, and that's all due to God's grace. And I have had so many of these moments. And you know, when I share about them, I see myself, I'm there again. They are so real. They are such a gift to me. The moment I recognized I had some self-respect, oh God, that was a biggie. Waking up and not knowing what I was feeling and taking me 20 minutes to figure out, it's self-respect. For the first time in my life, I got some self-respect. It's an amazing thing. But you know, if I hadn't been desperate from my life, if I hadn't been desperate because of what I was doing, I wouldn't have had a reason to change. I wouldn't have had a reason to get here. Desperation has always been the catalyst for action and change. And when I finally realized what I needed to do to change, what a blessing. What a blessing. The past 4 years have been such an amazing blessing in my life. I am, you know, my saying, this is what I constantly say everywhere. All my needs are met. My life is blessed. And I know this to be true. All my needs are met. You know, and when I think about it, like, I have people who love me and that I truly love. I have a safe place to spend my nights, a safe place to call home. I go home and I close the door and nothing can hurt me. I am able to take care of myself today. What a blessing, because I never could before. I wanted you to take care of me. Because I didn't know how. And now, I can take care of me. I love me today. Out of desperation came victory. And every one of my victories, I celebrate. And I celebrate them with people I love. And I love the people in these rooms. Because without the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I could not be sitting here. I could not be living the life that I'm living right now. And it is joyful. Thank you.
Thanks, Gail.
I'm an ACK. My name is Danny. On behalf of TAC 9, I would like to thank both Mike S. and Gail T. for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. Please join us in a circle to close this meeting with the we version of the Serenity Prayer.
Silence.
followed by the Wee version of Serenity Prayer. Can we have that moment now, please? Serenity Prayer.
God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep on that.
Easy from New York.
Easy. Nice, nice to meet you, man.
Welcome to Toronto.
Thank you so much for the service. Oh, God.